College sweethearts Sean Washington and Adrian Hickson were supposed to spend Adrian's winter break from law school celebrating her birthday and catching up on missed time. The last year of their relationship had been long distance, and so the couple was eager to be back together again. The first few days of their reunion seemed to be going smoothly until the afternoon of December 21st, 2005, when Sean and Adrian would get into a fight that would escalate to murder. Hi, I'm your host Gigi, and this is Noir True Crime Files. Since Valentine's Day is later this week, I decided to do an episode about a toxic relationship. I chose this particular case after I rewatched the episode of Snap that it was featured on. Plus, this case isn't really discussed as often as other cases that involve crimes of passion. Aside from Snapped, for my research, I watched an episode of another true crime show called I Knew My Murderer, and I read articles in Murderpedia. All sources used will be linked in the show notes. Sean D. Sewell Washington was born on September 18, 1981, in Chattanooga, Tennessee. He was raised by his mother, Carrie Ann Sewell, and it was just the two of them until Sean's father, Isaac Washington Sr., came back into his life when Sean was 13. In high school, Sean was a decent student, but he really loved basketball and hanging out with his friends. However, he did well enough in his studies that he was accepted into the University of Tennessee. During Sean's freshman year at TSU, he met another freshman named Adrian Hickson, and the couple became serious after a few months of dating. In fact, early into their relationship, Sean brought Adrian back home to Chattanooga to meet his family. Sean wanted more than anything to have a family of his own, so finding the right person to do that with meant a lot to him. The couple definitely wanted the same things as far as marriage and kids, but Adrian made it very clear to Sean that her career was her main priority, and Sean respected that. Adrian Hickson was born in Aiken, South Carolina in 1981 and was from an upper-class family. Her father, Sherman, was a dentist with his own practice, and her mother, Yvonne, was a middle school principal with a doctorate degree. By all accounts, Adrian had a privileged upbringing, but she excelled in school and also played sports such as volleyball and cheerleading. After being accepted into TSU, Adrian selected pre-law as her major, and her goal was to eventually become a criminal defense attorney. In 2003, Adrian graduated from TSU and began preparing herself for law school. She moved to Atlanta in order to take LSAT prep courses, and Sean decided to leave school to follow her. The couple settled in a suburb of Atlanta called Duluth and found an apartment. After their move, Sean began working two jobs. During the day, he drove a delivery truck for a local bakery called Flowers Baking Company, and at night he worked at a warehouse. Adrian had started taking paralegal courses and was also studying for the LSAT. Thanks to having two incomes, Sean was making a good amount of money, but according to family and friends, he was spending his money mostly on Adrian. Sean would buy her gifts to keep her happy, which was something Adrian was accustomed to since her parents had pretty much spoiled her whole life. Despite being well-liked and an excellent student, Adrian was pretty much described in the Snapped episode as a spoiled daddy's girl who always got what she wanted. In 2004, all of Adrian's hard work and studying for the LSAT finally paid off when she received the good news that she'd been accepted into Howard University's law school. But this meant that she would have to move to Washington, D.C. There was no way that Adrian was going to pass up this opportunity, but she also did not want to leave Sean. Sean also did not want to break up, but moving again was not an option for him since he was doing well at work and could risk losing his benefits. It wasn't an easy decision, but the couple decided that they would stay together and have a long-distance relationship. For the next year, Adrienne traveled back and forth from D.C. to Duluth twice a month, and Sean helped out by sending her money so that she could buy her plane tickets to come visit him. The arrangement worked for a little while, but eventually the distance started to put a strain on the relationship. When Adrienne was in town, she tried to balance spending time with Sean and studying, but according to the episode of I Knew My Murderer, she didn't always feel like her efforts were being reciprocated. The couple often argued while Adrienne was in town and would quickly make up before she left. Traveling back and forth continued to be a struggle for the couple, and despite Sean's plans to spend the winter holiday with Adrienne celebrating her birthday, Adrienne's demanding and controlling nature would only intensify, and this is where things would take a tragic turn. After completing her fall exams, Adrienne flew back to Duluth on December 17, 2005. Sean greeted her with flowers and an ice cream cake that said, "Happy birthday, Pookie, love you," on the top. Over the next few days, the couple went out to eat and partied with friends, so things seemed to be going well, but everything changed on December 21st. It was Adrienne's last day in Duluth with Sean, and she was supposed to be heading back to Aiken to spend time with her family for Christmas. Around 10 a.m., Sean left the apartment because he had promised his friend Michael Buchanan and his girlfriend Monique Doss that he would help them move into their new home. This upset Adrienne because she felt like her time with Sean was being interrupted, and she basically threw a fit. For the majority of the day, she proceeded to blow up Sean's phone, demanding to know where he was, who he was with, when he would be back, and she even accused him of cheating on her. When Sean eventually returned to his apartment later that afternoon, he was with Monique and Michael, and Adrienne met him outside in the parking lot. The couple began to argue, and according to Monique, Sean asked Adrienne why she was, quote, acting like an asshole, and in response, Monique says Adrienne punched Sean in the face. Fed up, Sean demanded that Adrienne go upstairs and pack up her things. Adrienne rushed upstairs, and Sean followed behind after a few minutes. He reportedly told Michael Buchanan that he wanted to make sure Adrienne wasn't upstairs messing up his apartment. The couple was gone for about 10 to 15 minutes, and what happened while they were up there differs depending on if you ask Adrienne or Duluth police investigators. What can be said for certain is that the couple continued to argue upstairs in the apartment, and Adrienne got a hold of a knife and proceeded to stab Sean twice, once in his left shoulder and upper left clavicle. Sean managed to stumble his way back downstairs to the parking lot where Monique and Michael were still waiting for him, and at first, the couple didn't notice anything wrong with him. But when Sean reached Michael's car and slumped in his driver's seat, that's when Monique noticed that Sean was bleeding profusely through his white shirt. The couple helped Sean into the back of the car and drove him to Gwinnett Medical Center. While in the back seat, Monique says she sat with Sean holding his head and he kept moaning, quote, "I'm gone, I'm gone." And Michael assured him that he was fine, that he was going to make sure Sean got to the hospital. When the group reached the hospital, Sean was admitted and listed under critical condition. At the same time that Sean was being rushed to the hospital, Adrienne had left the apartment, got into her car, and proceeded to drive to her parents' home in South Carolina. Sean's brother, Isaac Jr., claimed that he happened to stop by the apartment right after the stabbing, and he noticed that the front door had been left unlocked and a chair had been turned over. He said he received a text from Michael letting him know that Sean was in the hospital. Isaac says he quickly called Adrienne and said, quote, "So you're just going to stab my brother and leave?" And he says Adrienne denied stabbing Sean, but when Isaac asked her how he got hurt, did he just stab himself, Adrienne said, something like that. Isaac Jr. ended the call with Adrienne and rushed off to the hospital to be with his brother. As Adrienne is on the way to her parents' house, she's also on the phone with them, letting them know about her fight with Sean and how she might be in trouble. Adrienne and her parents met at a rest stop between Atlanta and Aiken, and the family drove back to Atlanta together. As they were making their way, the Hicksons called around and were able to connect with a lawyer named Dwight Thomas, who they ended up hiring that same night. After hearing about Adrienne's situation, Thomas advised her to turn herself in. So the next morning, Thomas and the Hicksons went to the Gwinnett County Police Station, but they learned that there wasn't a warrant out for Adrienne's arrest. Adrienne essentially was allowed to return back to Aiken, but in the event that a warrant was issued for her arrest, she would have to immediately return back to Atlanta. Now that Adrienne was free to go, the Hicksons headed back to South Carolina. Later that afternoon, Detective J.D. Smith visited Sean's apartment to check out the crime scene. In his snapped interview, Detective Smith stated that nothing in the apartment was broken or out of place and there was no apparent signs of a struggle. It didn't even appear that a stabbing had occurred, except for the small amounts of blood found on the living room wall next to the TV and multiple bloody puncture wounds found in the couch. The knife that was used to stab Sean was also still in the apartment, and found on it were small amounts of blood. Detective Smith would later interview Michael Buchanan, Monique Doss, and Isaac Jr., who all told the same story about Sean and Adrienne arguing and how he came back to the parking lot saying that Adrienne had stabbed him. At the conclusion of his investigation, Detective Smith classified Sean's case as an aggravated assault. Back at Gwinnett Medical Center, Sean's condition was beginning to get worse. He had been moved to the ICU and was suffering from internal bleeding. The loss of blood was causing Sean's head to swell up, and his doctors had discovered during a procedure that one of his arteries had been punctured when he was stabbed. At first, the doctors weren't able to find the source of the bleeding, and by the time that they did, Sean slipped into a coma. The next day, which was Christmas Day, Sean's father, Isaac Sr., called the Hicksons to inform them of Sean's condition, and when Adrienne heard the news, she quickly jumped into her car and drove off. The Hicksons got into their own car and followed behind their daughter. Isaac Sr. received a call from Adrienne's sister a few minutes later to let him know that Adrienne was on her way back to Atlanta. During the Hicksons' drive to Atlanta, Yvonne says that Isaac Sr. was calling them off and on, giving them updates on Sean. But by the time they reached the hospital, it was already too late. On Christmas evening, Sean Washington passed away. On the Snapped episode, his brother Isaac Jr. detailed how he laid his hand on his brother's chest as he took his last breath. The Hicksons made it to GMC before Adrienne and found Sean's family outside of the hospital hugging and saying their goodbyes. They were informed that Sean had passed away, and as they were consoling the family, Adrienne arrived. She was in tears and was asking for Sean, where he was, and how he was doing. When Yvonne broke the news to Adrienne that Sean had died, Adrienne passed out and fell back hard onto the concrete. According to Isaac Sr., Adrienne was carried into the back of her father's SUV and driven to the other side of the hospital to the emergency room. Adrienne was admitted to the hospital, but her strange behavior while she was there is left out of the Snapped episode. According to I Knew My Murderer, after Adrienne was admitted to the ER, she stole a medical scrub outfit and began wandering around the hospital, and the assumption is that she was looking for Sean. I also found a December 2005 article in the Gwinnett Daily Post where hospital staff told police that Adrienne had caused a scene by intentionally running into a glass door. After she was placed in a wheelchair, she snuck away, stole the scrub outfit, and was later seen walking around the hospital. The article further states that when officers eventually found Adrienne, she wasn't wearing the scrubs anymore and was in a designated quiet room with her mother and two other relatives. Both I Knew My Murderer and the 2005 article say that when police attempted to arrest Adrienne for Sean's murder, that she fainted again. After she was taken into custody, Adrienne was charged with murder, and in her booking photo, you can clearly see that she's wearing a suicide prevention jacket. Sean D. Sewell Washington's funeral was held on January 2, 2006 in his hometown of Chattanooga. His service was held at the chapel of Taylor Funeral Home and was officiated by Pastor Steve Underwood. At the end of the service, Sean was buried at the Forest Hills Cemetery. Adrienne Hicksons went to trial for the murder of Sean Washington on June 4, 2007. In his opening statement, prosecutor David Fife asked the jury to question Adrian's liability in Sean's death and to ultimately find her guilty. When defense attorney Dwight Thomas gave his opening statement, he acknowledged that Adrian had stabbed Sean, but that she did it to defend herself after Sean had attacked her inside the apartment. Thomas went on to describe Sean as, quote, possessive, obsessive, jealous, controlling, abusive, and violent. 2 days later, the prosecution shot back at the defense's claims against Sean's character by stating Adrian had been the one who was out of control on the day of the murder. To further prove their point, they called Detective Smith, who described the crime scene for the courtroom. He explained how he found blood on the wall and the knife that was used to kill Sean, but when he discussed the bloody stab marks he found on the couch, he said that it was an indication of how angry Adrian was because even after Sean got away, Adrian continued to stab the couch with the knife. Both Prosecutor Fife and Detective Smith believed that because Adrian had always gotten her way, that in this particular situation, she'd had a temper tantrum that had simply gone way too far. Monique Doss was the next witness on the stand, and she described the entire day with Sean. She started by talking about how Adrian was blowing up his phone, how initially she and Michael Buchanan were poking fun at Sean, saying Adrian had him on a tight leash. Monique also described the argument in the parking lot and how Adrian had been hitting Sean, but he had his hands up in order to block her hits. When Adrian punched Sean in the face, Monique says that Sean yelled at her for her to go upstairs and pack up her things, and that he followed behind her a few minutes later. The only other person that witnessed Sean and Adrian fighting that day was Michael Buchanan, but he was unable to testify because he'd been murdered on September 7, 2006. There was never any details given about Michael's death in the Snapped episode, so I did some research to find out what happened to him. Michael had been in a rap group called Three Kings with two other men named Artist Tony and Javon Priest. While the group was out promoting their latest project, they stopped at an Atlanta gas station to meet with a man named Tay. Michael got into Tay's Ford Focus while Artist and Javon followed behind in their Cadillac. At some point, two men pulled up in a Mustang beside Artist and Javon, so they let them over to get in front because they assumed that they were Tay's associates. All three cars pulled into a random driveway, and Michael got into the Mustang and began talking to the driver, Abdullah Williamson. Artist would later testify that after a few minutes, he heard a gunshot and saw Michael jump out of the Mustang and run past the Cadillac and fall to the ground. Williamson and the other passenger in the Mustang, Fernando Cannon, proceeded to point their guns at Artist and Jovan. While he was on the ground, Michael yelled for Artist and Jovan to give Williamson the red box that was in the Cadillac that had $10,000 in it. Jovan threw the box out of the window, and after Williamson and Cannon grabbed the money, they jumped back into the Mustang and sped away. Ardia and Jovan carried Michael back into the Cadillac and rushed him to the hospital, but he passed away later that night. Williamson was eventually arrested and charged with murder, armed robbery, aggravated assault, and possession of a firearm. At Williamson's trial, the jury was unable to rule on the murder charge, but he was found guilty of the other charges and was sentenced to life in prison. Cannon was also arrested and charged with robbery, and he was later sentenced to 20 years. Michael's death would be used at Adrian's trial to prove yet another claim that defense attorney Thomas was making against Sean's character, which was that he was a drug dealer. It was revealed to the court that at the time of his death, Sean had two pending drug charges against him and that he'd been out on bond. Thomas would go on to say that the main reason why Adrian was so adamant for Sean to come home on December 21st was because she didn't want him out running the streets with Michael, who she considered to be a bad influence. On June 11th, Adrian took the stand in her defense and told the court about her relationship with Sean. She described Sean as constantly being angry and that when he got physical with her, he would beat on her and choke her. Adrian also admitted to knowing that Sean was a drug dealer and that she had seen him with small bags of cocaine before. When defense attorney Thomas asked Adrian to explain what happened inside the apartment the day of the murder, Adrian tearfully recalled how she tried to run away from Sean, but that he had caught up to her and cornered her in the kitchen. Adrian said she reached out for the knife that was sitting next to the birthday cake Sean bought her and stabbed him. In Prosecutor Fife's closing argument, he pointed out that the blood spatter evidence at the crime scene didn't support Adrian's version of events. There wasn't any blood found in the kitchen, just on the wall and on the living room couch, which meant that Adrian must have gone into the kitchen to get the knife and confronted Sean in the living room with it. In his closing arguments, defense attorney Thomas reiterated that Adrian had indeed acted in self-defense and reminded the court of Sean's abuse towards her. Thomas went on to tell the jury that if the prosecution had not proved Adrian's guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, that they should find her not guilty. After both sides rested, Adrian's fate was left in the hands of the jury. They deliberated for 3 days, but on June 18th, they informed the judge that they were deadlocked and wouldn't be able to make a decision. The prosecution realized that the jury's 7-5 vote meant they would have a harder time proving Adrian's guilt if they were to have a retrial, so they offered her an Alford plea. Adrian accepted the deal, which meant she was not admitting guilt, but was acknowledging that there was sufficient enough evidence to convict her. Adrian's murder charge was dropped down to voluntary manslaughter, and on June 19th, she was sentenced to 5 years in prison. After sentencing was over, both Adrian and Sean's families came together to embrace and console one another. In his interview with Snapped, Isaac Sr. said, quote, "Nobody wins. I lost my son forever, and Adrian is going to lose part of her career, and hopefully she won't lose her mind." Adrian was sent to prison and was released early for good behavior in the winter of 2010. 2 years after her release, she became eligible to petition to have her probation lifted. I wasn't able to find much present-day information on Adrian aside from speculations that I've read on different sites. Some people believe that Adrian changed her name and moved back to South Carolina, or that she might still be living in Atlanta. I did find that Adrian got a speeding ticket in 2011, and there are some recent photos of her in the last few years on the internet if you look hard enough. I don't doubt that Sean and Adrian had an unhealthy relationship. There were even reports dating back to their college days at TSU of police being called for domestic disputes between them. It just bothered me during my research for this case that I wasn't able to find much character information on Sean compared to what I found about Adrian. Knowing more details about someone's life isn't going to necessarily reveal that they're abusive, but it will always be Adrian's word over Sean's since he's no longer here to defend himself. I'm not at all trying to victim blame Adrian because I realize that abuse victims typically go back to their abuser several times before they actually leave, and I realize that Stockholm Syndrome is a thing, but Adrian had plenty of opportunities to get away from Sean when she was traveling back and forth from DC to Atlanta, and she could have also gone to be with her parents in South Carolina instead of accepting Sean's invitations to come see him. If Sean was a drug dealer, he was most likely using the money he was making to not only fly Adrian down to see him, but to continue to give her gifts since that's what she was accustomed to. I honestly think that what happened in that apartment was a fight between two young and immature people who couldn't let each other go, and unfortunately, one of them ended up losing their lives. Thank you guys so much for joining me on this week's episode of NTCF Podcast. The show is available on all major streaming platforms. Please be sure to rate, comment, and subscribe on whichever platform you're listening on. Also, if you want to share your thoughts and opinions about this case, you can connect with me on Twitter and Instagram at NTCF Podcast. I'll be back next week with a new crime file. So until then, goodbye for now.